Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world. Getting on a plane to see a bunch of snakes. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and we are joined by Samuel L. Jackson. Samuel.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, what does Samuel think about, you know, Alec Thomas's performance this October? Maybe people can pull some strings and find out in the next 48 hours as we record this on Wednesday morning. Jake Mintz, the Arizona Diamondbacks, yes, the baseball team that plays in Arizona, they're going to the World Series. Yeah, that's a thing that's happening, is they have defeated the Philadelphia Phillies in seven games. The Snakes are more than just alive. They are a thrive. They are going to the World Series for the first time since 2001, where they will face the Texas Rangers, and the final result of this season will have us in awe one way or the other. This is not a World Series preview episode. This is a, oh my God, the Diamondbacks just won Game 7 episode, as well as some assorted Phillies end of season thoughts. I know there's a lot of other news going on right now in terms of GMs, managers, whatever. We don't really have the energy for that. We will provide thoughts in due time about that process. But right now, there's baseball happening, and we're going to talk about that.
Bob Melvin, he's done a lot of managing.
Wow, he's going to keep managing. All right, there we go. There's your thoughts.
Nailed it.
I have more thoughts on that, but we're not going to do that. Because while the Padres and Giants are trying to, you know, take each other's managers and players, whatever, the 84-win Diamondbacks are like, all right, that's cool, guys. I'm going to go to the World Series. Jake, you were at Game 7 last night, and we are going to recap it.
I'm going to start at the end for a moment that made me laugh very hard. In the post-game press conference, well, actually, sorry. On Twitter yesterday, you tweeted a stat about the Texas Rangers and their road record, and you gave the Colorado Rockies quite astray.
I did. Yes. So this was after the Rangers won Game 7. And I was like, holy shit, like they're undefeated on the road in the postseason. That's historic. And winning the 8 straight games on the road, my mind thought to, oh, like who's just the worst road team every year? It's the Rockies, right? And so maybe there was some stat there. So yes, was that a total unnecessary burn? 100%. Was it a fact to illustrate the Rangers' success in this calendar month on the road in the playoffs? Also, yes.
But you were not the only person to ether the Colorado Rockies, because in his post-game press conference, Evan Longoria said the following thing.
What did he say?
They didn't believe in us. They had us behind the Dodgers, behind the Padres, behind the Giants. They didn't believe in us.
He's like, they still believed in us more than the Rockies, to be clear.
I mean, come on. Yeah, Evan Longoria was like, come on. So yeah. Anyway, I just thought that was funny. A very funny place to start. But let's get in. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are so many parts of this underdog story that I love. I think you wrote it really well for Fox Sports. There's a couple excerpts from your piece that I definitely want to pull out and talk about. But let's do that afterwards. Let's talk about the game.
So, Ranger Suarez, Brandon Pfaadt. Okay. Brandon Pfaadt, Ranger Suarez, both totally solid. Yeah. Neither of their performances, in my opinion, were the deciding factor in this game. Diamondbacks jump out, one run in the top of the first, Corbin Carroll single, Gabby Moreno single, and then you have a fielder's choice, I believe.
Christian Walker trying not to ground into a double play, RBI.
He did it! Yay! Yeah. You did it! That's a run, though. And Corbin Carroll, single. Keep that in the back of your cranium, okay, my dear friends.
All right, Corbin Carroll.
Bottom of the second. Alec Boehm, best first swing pitch he's taken all postseason. Fastball up and in from Brandon Pfaadt. A very good pitch from Brandon Pfaadt on the black. Boehm kind of cheats to it, pulls his hands, his long arms, his tree trunk limbs inside the baseball and drives it out to tie the game at one. And now it's like, okay, everyone in Citizens Bank Park, relax. The Phillies are not just going to roll over yet.
Not yet. Not yet, anyway.
Bottom of the fourth, Phillies take the lead. Bryson Stott, RBI double on just a fantastic inside-out swing to score a run. However, with runners on first and third, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, that moment, too, because Boehm had walked right before that. And, you know, for these last few games, it's like, oh, like Bowman Stott, where are you? And so for them to show up early in the stage there, it's like, okay, here we go. But as you just mentioned, like, Fott was fine. Like, that Bohm homer did not rattle him. Like, he went right back to work, got two more strikeouts in that inning. Suarez was settling in. His curveball was fantastic. That's been the X factor for him all season. That's why he kind of really came on in the second half after the injuries. It's because he kind of learned this curveball this year. He's getting more strikeouts with it. So he's looking good. Fott's looking good. And we assumed that there would be a quick leash for both of them, but it seemed like both managers did want to trust their starters more than maybe you would expect in a game seven, but I think that they earned that.
But then you have a key moment of the game. Runners on first and third with one out in the fourth. And Nick Castellanos, who is swinging at everything and looks as bad as I've really ever seen a guy look. And it's weird because he was so good in the end of the Braves series and homered in his first plate appearance of this one. It's like, all right, Nick Castellanos, October. Jordan hit me up and was like, hey, could you ask, maybe get some quotes about Nick Castellanos for a piece about how he's good in October now. And then the second I got those quotes for you.
Yeah. I mean, the guy went from whatever, the second player in baseball history to have back-to-back two homer games in the playoffs, joining Reggie Jackson. Then he homers the first at-bat in game one, and then 0 for 24 since that home run early in game one.
So he strikes out with runners in the corners. Brandon Marsh walks, and then Johan Rojas, God bless his soul, he strikes out to end the inning. He did his best, man.
He did his best, and also his best was not even close to good enough.
I want to give him a hug and tell Johan Rojas that it's not his fault. We skip ahead to the top of the fifth, and the Diamondbacks come alive. Emmanuel Rivera, of all freaking people, single. Sacrifice bunt, moves to second. Ketel Marte strikes out swinging. Two outs. And here we have a key moment of the game. Corbin Carroll, left-handed bat. Ranger Suarez, left-handed pitcher. This could have been a spot where Rob Thompson went out and got Ranger Suarez, could have gotten him before Ketel Marte, who's usually been better from the right side, mm-hmm. could have swapped him around, made him hit from the left side. He trusts Suarez. Carroll rolls a single up the middle for his third hit of the day.
Third hit of the day, I believe the first time in Ranger Suarez's career he's allowed three hits to a left-handed batter in the same game. And Corbin Carroll, who had been so quiet, basically scored once or twice over the last eight games and had not driven in a run. He dominates this game. He absolutely dominates this game. And in this moment, you know, he ties it with an RBI single. And you mentioned the Marte decision. It was interesting because, you know, we've seen the D-backs lineup change a few times against lefties, against righties, where we've seen Carroll at the top, Marte second. In this case, you know, striking out Marte there, where you know, Marte's just been so good on both sides of the plate. So, I mean, the matchups aren't maybe that important at this stage here. But to see him there clearly gave him confidence to face Carroll a third time. And he just leaned into the matchup so much because, again, Ranger, even after giving up two hits, he had just been so good his whole career against lefties, and Thompson sticks with him for, I guess, one batter too long.
In the box score, it's one batter too long, but from a process perspective, it's not.
I don't think this was a horrible manager decision. Yeah. Because, yeah, like if he brings in Hoffman, he might be just as likely to give up a hit there. And Hoffman's great.
Hoffman comes in. Corbin's still second base off of him because relievers are worse at holding runners on. That is a very key moment because Gabby Moreno singles to right field off to Nick Castellanos. He gets caught up in between first and second, and the inning, Juan Soto 2019 wildcard game style. But the go-ahead run scores, and that would be it. That was enough.
Sort of, yeah. So first of all, Gabby Moreno, oh my God. I mean, wow. The number of clutch hits this guy has, and you know, when I wrote the feature on him coming into the series, people were like, oh, what's the big deal? Like 104 OPS plus, like how is this guy? This guy's not a franchise catcher, whatever. I'm like, I don't know what the hell else you need to see. He's caught every inning. He's delivered like five unbelievably clutch hits, batting third, which he hadn't done the entire season. And he's about to become I wrote this before the series, like ahead of even not, I put it in the note before the series because I was like, I want to get this in here, even though I'm not sure the Diamondbacks are going to win the series, is that if they advance, he will become the youngest catcher to start a World Series game since Buster Posey in 2010. So that's, it's hard to do, right? Not to mention the fact that he's managing this pitching staff to an incredible effort all month long. And he's just amazing. He's quickly becoming one of my favorite players. So he gives the D-backs the lead 3-2 in the top of the fifth.
Bottom of the fifth, Schwarber leads off with a double. And it's like, okay, Phillies punch back.
Against Mantiply.
Against so Joe Mantiply, who's coming for Fott, the left-hander. Trey Turner, awful. Respectfully. Horrendous. Respectfully.
I think he finished the series 0 for 21 or something.
Abysmal. Respectfully. And it wasn't just that he was getting out. His process was bad. Castellanos swinging at everything under the sun is, we've seen that before.
And sometimes it doesn't work.
And sometimes it doesn't work. Trey Turner turtled a little bit over the last couple days. Trey Turtle.
And he
respectfully. I just want to say this moment to me is really big because Mantiply is in. The lefty, he's not that good. Joe Mantiply,
he's not that good. He's just not been. I know he was an all-star. Like he's gotten some big outs this month, but he's clearly been gettable. Clearly,
he's the guy you can pop. And Turner with Schwarber on second and nobody out, bunts foul on the first pitch for Mantiply, on what was easily the worst pitch thrown all game by any Diamondback, a 90-mile-an-hour cookie. That Turner just kind of farts foul. He ends up grounding out, not advancing the runner. And it was just like, at that point you knew, I mean, if you didn't know already, he was cooked for the rest of the game.
And Turner, I was like, is this top? In the moment, I think I told you, like, there's no shot he did it on his own. But he admitted, he said afterwards. Trey Turner said after, like, I was just trying to make something happen. They were playing back, like, blah, blah, blah. But to your point, like, if this was a really tough right-handed reliever, okay, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like an amazing bunter, which I honestly don't even remember or know how good of a bunter Trey Turner is. I know he didn't look good there. Obviously, he's fast. But again, he's Trey Turner. He's making $300 million not because he's fast and a good bunter. It's because he can fucking rake.
Right.
Especially against left-handed pitching. And like, that's a matchup. You have to be swinging the bat. You have to be swinging the bat.
He's like a career 1,000-ish OPS guy against lefties.
Yeah, like just, you know, inexplicable. And again, it was like so in your own head at that point. And
right.
I know, and he was 0 for 18 going into that at bat, but it's just, oh.
We talk a lot about the vibes and the tension and clenching versus clinching, right? And very rarely can you see that in real time.
Yeah.
But when Turner bunts that foul, you can feel the panic kind of setting in for the Phillies. Yeah. Harper flies out on a blazer to Lourdes Gurriel at the wall. Mm-hmm. Ryan Thompson comes in, and that's pretty much ball game. Alec Bohm pops out to end the inning. The Diamondbacks tack on another run in the seventh inning when Ketel Marte doubles against Jose Alvarado. Mm-hmm. Corbin Carroll, sac fly, brings Geraldo Perdomo home, and it's 4-2. And that 4-2 lead feels like 100 to
oh, it's
six.
It's so it's 20 runs and not two runs. Quickly on the Carroll sack fly. I mean, Alvarado is up there perfectly executing 101 on the inner half. And so while aesthetically you see the sack fly, it's an insurance run, it doesn't feel like this historic or like unbelievable achievement. Corbin Carroll getting that run in, even though they didn't ultimately need the extra run, It made it feel that like that much bigger of a deficit for Philadelphia. And for him to be able to get that run in, like, we talk about it so much. Any of our favorite teams, when they can't score the run when there's a guy on third with less than two outs, like, that's what that is. Top five drives you most crazy as a fan, right? Of course. But to be able to execute there, I guess, as Corbin Carroll against Jose Alvarado, who was throwing the exact pitches he was supposed to and blew by Carroll, I think, a couple times before he got him, is just massive and like a huge example of why Corbin Carroll is as special as he is. Because he, again, you look at the pitches, Alvarado did exactly what he's supposed to do. And I guess if he wanted a strikeout, maybe he needed to do something else. But either way, that was just an incredibly impressive at bat.
Bottom of the seventh, the last gasp.
Well, yeah? Zach Wheeler comes in. I mean, I don't want to gloss over this too much.
Go
because
ahead.
Zach Wheeler comes in for Gabby Moreno and strikes him out with one of the nastiest sweepers he's thrown all month. And it's just like, fuck. Like that, this is going to be wasted. I knew as soon as he came in, I was like, this is going to be wasted. Like, we're going to, this is going to be a performance lost to history.
There was a the Kershaw performance in game 7 of the 2017 World Series comes in that last game and is just stellar for 4 or 5 innings, I think. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't matter because the Dodgers couldn't score against the Astros. Mm-hmm. Not quite that level, obviously, because it's not the World Series and Wheeler's not Kershaw, even though he's great. But you're right. Wheeler is a machine. I have gained a lot of respect for him as a pitcher. He's one of the best 5 pitchers in the world, full stop. Mm-hmm. Bottom 7, last gasp, last dance.
Oh, boy.
Say goodbye. Saul Frank comes in. Andrew, yes. Saul Frank. The lefty, the left-handed.
Yes.
He comes in. He's been wild this month.
Okay? Yes.
And he has not been nails. He has, yes, been another guy you can get. Marsh strikes out. Pache comes to pinch hit for Rojas and works a spectacular walk. The, yes, Christian Pache moment.
This is a lifeline here, right? This is the thing about this game. Like, it's not like the Phillies. There were moments here. There were opportunities. There were absolutely opportunities. And if Christian Pache is drawing a pinch hit walk, you better be capitalizing on that.
Then Schwarber walks. I think he faced Saul Frank 4 times in the series and walked 3 times, which, yeah, is just, Schwarber is amazing.
Because again, going into the series, it's like, oh, Saul Frank versus Schwarber. And Schwarber's, yeah, like, I'm chilling. I'm not going to swing it.
Bullshit. First and third. First and second. One out.
It's time
here
for the gink.
Here comes the gink. The bullpen door flies open and that demon strolls out from beyond the hedges. The gink with the stink comes on in. Kevin Ginkle,
oh my gosh,
has arrived. He gets Trey Turner to fly out weekly to Alec Thomas. Before getting away with one
getting away with two.
Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper. Okay, we got Bryce Harper, runners on first and second. He's the go-ahead run in the 7th inning of a game 7. And as someone who was in the yard when he homered against the Padres last year, I shut my laptop. I was like,
here we
pull
go.
Out my binoculars. You know, took all my Adderall. I was like, I want to remember this. Like, I want to be locked in for this experience here. I want to, you know. He's going to send one to the great beyond. And I said to Stephanie Apstein, Sports Illustrated, who's sitting next to me, when the count went to 2-1, mm-hmm, Bryce Harper loves a 2-1 count. Loves it. And I was like, Steph, he gets a heater here in the zone. It's pandemonium.
And
Jake Mintz was wrong.
And the theme that you wrote about for Fox Sports of irrational belief, which is, I believe, the words that I don't know Mike Hazen used, but it basically kind of pulled out of some of the quotes he gave you. The confidence with which this team was playing was on display in this pitch, in this at bat, because he spikes a slider to make it 0-1, and then he gives him a fastball right down the middle that Bryce Harper takes right down the middle, right there, 1-0, not 3-0. You're not taking 3-0, 1-0, right? It's right there. Bryce Harper takes it. Another slider in the dirt. And then 2-1, as you mentioned. I mean, most hitters like a 2-1 count. Bryce Harper especially. And I will say, he hit it hard. 108 off the bat, but a 44-degree launch angle is not particularly, especially hitting it kind of to the opposite field, is not especially conducive to a home run. And as many people have pointed out, as I think Bryce Harper even pointed out, like the difference between that ball being over the fence, like way over the fence because you're hitting it that hard, and the flyout that we saw is millimeters on the bat. But Kevin Ginkle was pitching with more confidence than Bryce Harper was batting with. And that was enough of a difference to end the inning and keep it 4-2.
The gink cares not for your millimeters.
And Kevin Ginkle at this point,
fuck,
it's like, holy shit, that
holy
just happened,
shit,
right? And then he comes back out for the bottom of the 8th. And you're like, oh my, no, okay, whatever. So the D-backs, they actually sort of threaten again, but then it's whatever. They don't score in the top of the 8th. In the bottom of the 8th, it's like Kevin Ginkle, in what he had already achieved against Bryce Harper there and Trey Turner, was already legendary status, right? The dude was already a great half inning in Diamondbacks franchise history. And he's like, you know what? Watch this. Watch this. All those Kevin Ginkle holy shit tweets you just sent 10 minutes ago, watch this. Strikes out the sign. Wasn't even close. I mean, it was just like, if you had never seen this guy before, you're like, oh, that's one of the greatest relievers of all time. It's Kevin Ginkle, of course. But that's what he's been this postseason. That's what
Kimbrel,
he's been.
Chapman, Jansen, Ginkle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at this point, he's been basically the most dominant reliever this postseason.
Yeah.
It's been him.
And is some of the obsession with him because his last name is fun to say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Of course.
If his name was Ryan Thompson, it'd still be cool. But like, he's the Gink.
He's the Gink. And he's throwing. I mean, the slider was just, oh my gosh. I mean, these guys had no chance. Bohm strikes out, smashes his bat in a million pieces, chucks it against the dugout wall. He's losing it. Stott strikes out, Realmuto strikes out, and you're just like, oh my God, that is one of the greatest relief appearances I've ever seen in playoff history. Am I a prisoner of the moment? Hell yeah, and I'm enjoying every second of it. Kevin Ginkle, what a showing. Top nine, D-backs are now in, holy shit, we're about to go to the World Series, let's just get out mode. Totally don't blame them. We hand the ball over to Paul Sewald. And Paul Sewald, oh, wow. I mean, I couldn't be happier for this guy. Nick Castellanos flies out weekly. So does Brandon Marsh. And so does the Phillies' new Michael Martinez for the 2016 Cleveland World Series, ending with Michael Martinez. I know people were comparing it to Vaughn Grissom in the last round. This is a little different. But again, like, it's not Johan Rojas's fault, but that's who came up. And the fact that they couldn't get it to Schwarber,
that's
is
thing,
what also
dude.
Makes the Ginkle appearance so amazing.
That's the thing. You're spot on. Harper flies out to end the seventh, and it's like, okay, we're at 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We're probably going to see Schwarber again. They just need one base
that's
runner.
All we need to, and if because you get, Schwarber was, even in this game, still locked in.
Still locked in.
Get it, Schwarber.
Give Schwarber NL MVP or NLCS MVP. Like, I'm not even kidding. He was so zoned in.
Yes.
He was unfazed by the moment. What a remarkable player.
Yes.
But they can't get it back to him. And that, you're right, that makes the Gink, the Gink's seventh and mostly his eighth. Like,
eighth. Yes. Yes.
Ruthless. Yes. You will not be seeing Kyle Schwarber again.
No, he said absolutely not. And then Castellanos, who at this point was just a mega funk, and then Marsh. You know, Marsh generally played pretty well.
He was great.
Yeah, Marsh was great.
Marsh was very good this week.
Totally.
He was one of the guys who did not really fold in the moment that much.
Agreed.
But yeah, Jake Cave battles. Fouls off a lot of pitches against Paul Sewald. Lofts went down the right field line. Fittingly, into the glove of Corbin Carroll. And the snakes are alive.
The snakes are alive. I mean, this was just
it was
there's so much here.
Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll kind of pick apart some of the themes, motifs, and narratives here. Mm-hmm. What this means for the Diamondbacks, what this means for the Phillies. I went into both locker rooms.
Okay.
I got a whole lot of sad and a whole lot of happy.
That's good.
And then didn't sleep since. So I'll do my best to relay those emotions when we get back from break.
Hey everyone, producer Chris here with a quick housekeeping note about our merch. Look, in Australia, we love clothes and almost always wear them. If you're like us and also enjoy dabbling in clothes wearing, then why not consider some official Baseball Barbercast merchandise? Whether it's a jumper you're after, which you would call a sweatshirt, a cap, which we would call an old hair hugger, or a shirt, which we would call a belly wrap, we have it all for you. But that's not all. Do you also like to drink water or caffeinated beverages? Well, that's great because we have mugs and bottles to help you quench your thirst too. To buy any of this merch, go to podswag.com/baseball. The link is in the description of the podcast. And don't leave yourself clothesless this postseason.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Now that we have recapped the game, it's time to recap how we're feeling. How are these teams feeling? Jake, you were at Citizens Bank Park for officially the last time in 2023. even though you probably didn't think that was going to be the case. And so you saw the end of the Phillies season. You saw it. I remember when you wrote at the end of the Phillies run last year, kind of the mood of the end of the Phillies season. But now we are seeing it in a very different way. And that had become clear earlier in the postseason. The expectations and the pressure coming into this series, coming into this postseason was like, hey, okay, sure, you're still technically a wild card team, but this team should be in the World Series, should have a great chance to win it all. They expected that. They were playing like it. They seemed unbeatable, especially at home. And then it all just came crumbling down in multiple ways. This was not a one-game implosion. This was a multifaceted kind of culmination of too many players on the roster not delivering in way too many spots.
Last year, when they lost Game 6, the vibe was don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened. Mm-hmm. And last night, the vibe was cry because we really bungled it.
Yes.
That's what it was. Now, it was an embarrassing way to go. Mm-hmm. But the way that it ended, there was no royal, like, doofy mistake.
No.
In the last two games. I know Kimbrel kind of single-handedly biffed game 4. Made a series. But
yeah,
there was no real single villain to pin the blame on.
I agree.
And that spread the sadness out. Mm-hmm. A little bit. Everyone mm-hmm. had their own level of guilt. Yep. Harper for missing that pitch. Schwarber probably felt guilty for not setting the right tone, which is, you know, funny. Garrett Stubbs probably felt guilty for the offhand running in the pool thing. Mm-hmm. Like all these guys probably, Nola for not being good at game 6. They all felt it, and they all felt it together.
Yes.
Right? And I think that made it both easier and harder for them because this group, like, I'm not trying to... This might come across as shallow when they just lost. Like, I do think they have a special level of unity in that room.
Yeah.
And so when that unity crumbles and it means nothing, right, and it doesn't result in the goal, that's really difficult to swallow. Whereas, like, if everyone hates one another and you're just a talented bunch and you get knocked out, it's like, oh, yeah. Like, we just didn't
sometimes
have...
you lose the baseball game.
Yeah. Correct. And this is similar to when the Braves lost. Mm-hmm. I wrote about how their ending was a disservice to the talent of the team, mm-hmm. that their early exit was so unfortunate because of what they could have been, what they could have accomplished. Mm-hmm. The Milwaukee Brewers, when they lost two games to the Diamondbacks, it was like, well, that's
like, it was technically an upset, but it was like, I've seen the Brewers lose two games looking like that before, whatever.
That's the end of a season. Mm-hmm. They will rue the missed opportunity. It's not even close to what the Braves and now the Phillies feel, right? And that's really important to understand. You had all the classic images of a losing locker room, and in a game 7, they hang the plastic wrap mm-hmm. taped to the top of the ceiling around the locker room edges so that if the Phillies score 3 runs in the bottom of the 9th, suddenly, and they're
going to be ready for both teams.
Got to be ready for both teams. So that's up while everyone's kind of sad and having their sad beers. And that's kind of like, it is like a backwards warped, depressing halo, like a cloud over the entire scene, which I found very interesting.
And there was also, Matt Gelb put the detail in his piece, which again makes sense, which is just like, the detail that says, oh, like the flight to Texas tomorrow is at this time. That's already put up on the clubhouse, bulletin board or whatever. Like, of course, like that's the expectation for both teams, right? That's not that's just like when you're at a game 7 and you have the confidence, that's how it works. But when you lose, boy, does that hurt.
Yes. And, there were tears. Mm-hmm. And whenever there are tears in those rooms, I find it really reassuring because the most I've ever cried in my life was when I lost my last college baseball game. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to know that these way more talented, way richer, way more...
they give a shit, man. Yeah,
classically machismo dudes give as much of a shit.
And I guess, again, like when we kind of reflect on this Phillies, I mean, everything you just said is spot on. And it's disappointing. And like you mentioned, like it was a collective. It wasn't one moment. It wasn't one game. They were up 2-0. They were up 3-2. They were undefeated at home until, you know, game six of this series, like all these different things. And you think about like, right, who showed up? Who like definitively showed up for the Phillies, right? Zach Wheeler showed up. Kyle Schwarber showed up. I would say that
Bryce Harper showed up. He missed one pitch.
He showed up. He showed up. Yes. Bryce Harper showed up. And then, but beyond that, like it was, and like Jeff Hoffman, I would say for the most part showed up. Alvarado showed up, right? But you just had a lot of other really good players that just did not do enough in too many spots. And like, I mean, Castellanos and Turner finishing a combined 0 for 43, like that ain't going to cut it. Right. There's just too many spots where you need to drive a run and it didn't happen.
And you could pick apart, you know, the Rob Thompson lineup construction stuff, but Bohm homering almost made it not matter. And the faith in Bohm was vindicated. And maybe some of the pitching decisions. If you score three runs across two games at home in a game six and a game seven against the Arizona Diamondbacks, that's it.
And you can't get Schwarber up in that last like all those things, right? This offense really just went quiet in a pretty stunning way collectively.
Two final things about the Phillies, okay? Rhys Hoskins was there last night.
Rhys
Hoskins, who claims that he could have been ready for the World Series after rehabbing his ACL, came back for game seven. Just to be there one more time. He will be a free agent at season's end. He had a ton of reporters around him last night. Like he did media for a while for someone who hasn't played a Major League Baseball game this season. And he took it all in stride. That must have been very tough for him to be removed from it, to have no impact on it, and yet to feel the pain of it at the same time.
Yeah, because he came back. You know, he'd been in Clearwater still trying to get ready for the World Series in theory. And I listened to some of his quotes after the game. And of course he's being asked about free agency, whatever. And he basically made the point that like, yeah, like this is special. There's not everywhere where you can go where you truly believe you can win the World Series every year. And like, he feels like he has that in Philly, but this is just, again, spinning it forward to Philly's offseason, just bigger picture stuff. They've got some pretty important decisions to make. I mean, Bryce Harper is maybe a first baseman now. Like if they want to keep the Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber first base DH combination, which obviously worked extremely well this month and, you know, in the regular season, that's going to squeeze Rhys Hoskins out of things. And so that is a decision. But maybe Bryce Harper's back in the outfield next year. Who knows? But there's versions of that we just have no idea how that's going to work. Of course, that'll be a storyline of this offseason. But I agree. And I guess credit to Rhys for standing there and talking. I mean, this is such a unique situation. It says a lot about, of course, how beloved he is and how willing he was to kind of speak up about this unique experience that he had this year in a really challenging way.
And Aaron Nola had a similar situation, except he played baseball this season. Aaron Nola will be a free agent at the end of the year. I think it's like 50-50 that he comes back. They need another pitcher. The Phillies need, I mean,
Rangers, I think they're going to really try to bring him back. I really do.
I think so too. I think he likes it there. And it's not as if they're not going to spend the money. John Middleton, their owner, made the rounds in the room last night in the losing clubhouse, like dapping everybody up, thanking them. And my favorite was Michael Lorenzen. He goes to Michael Lorenzen. He's like, thanks for showing up. He's like, thanks for coming out. And Lorenzen's like, no worries. He's like, and that no-hitter, one of the greatest moments in Phillies history. And Lorenzen's just like, yeah, I appreciate it. That's great.
And that's true. That's objectively true, right?
But the Phillies have decisions to make. But before we get out of here, let's just give the kudos to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Preview the World Series once I get some sleep.
Yes. Now I'm excited because we get to keep talking about this team, so we don't have to cram it all into these next, you know, 5 to 10 minutes. But I mean, this is one of the great, you know, underdog stories of all time. But I think what I've learned kind of watching this team, and as people are, oh my God, 84 wins, how do they do this? How do they beat all these teams that have higher payrolls and more players that you've heard of, whatever? Ultimately, like baseball players now, like these teams, whatever their run differential is, however many wins, like these guys they're so good. They're so good at baseball. Like I think a lot about how we often, you know, we've made the jokes about, oh, you know, Adam Ottavino versus Babe Ruth. Oh my God, these guys would kick any player that went back to 1909, you know, and played would be the greatest player anybody's ever seen, right? But like, I think about like what would this team look like in 1993? Would they like? Would it look like one of the best teams that we've seen? Because the talent level is just so high that it's just misleading. 84 wins. In some ways, it's accurate. Like, that's a long 162 games does tell us something. But ultimately, if you were good enough to even be the last team in, you're a really good baseball team. And when you have Corbin Carroll, who's on your roster, capable of essentially winning a game by himself in Game 7 of the World Series after not doing shit for 8 games, that's a pretty big advantage that you have. And that is what is part of what makes this team so special.
It's not complicated. The Phillies did it last year, mm-hmm. right? A combination of nothing to lose mm-hmm. and enough talent to win.
Exactly.
The Marlins this year had nothing to lose and were not good. Yes. They were not good enough to win. The Diamondbacks were.
Yes. And there were a couple things, like, I love the Gallen quote in your story is fantastic.
You want to read it?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, just quickly on this Gallen quote.
Yeah.
I know he has a Philly accent all the time. If he's had a couple of beers, that thing was, I'll send you the audio, Jordan.
It's already the thickest one in the big leagues as far as I'm concerned.
I'll send it to you. It's like ratcheted up to 45. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Epic hoagie mouth. One of my favorite terms. But the quote here, like, I just love, this made me think of, the Hazen quote. Well, I want to read the Hazen quote first, actually, and then we'll go back to Gallen. Hazen told you, right, we have a really young team, a bunch of 23-year-old kids. I don't think they know what they're doing here. I think that irrational belief is that they don't know the other side of the coin. I think it helps us walk in this environment. And that's totally it. I saw that with the Reds for pretty much the entire regular season. And ultimately, they weren't good enough, right? They were too injured, whatever. But like, it's the same thing. When they're one of the best teams in baseball for 6 weeks and it doesn't make any sense because they were projected to lose 100 games, it's because they were a bunch of rookies and they didn't know any better. They were like, oh, are we supposed to be struggling? Like, I didn't know that. Like, what difference do I know? All Matt McClain has done and Ellie De La Cruz done is win, 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 win. Now, eventually that catches up to you because baseball is really hard. But there are more than enough good players on this team and just such a strong foundation with those young players, with Carroll, with Moreno, and then enough of these pitchers, these veteran pitchers that have just shown up and had the best month of their lives. And that is enough. That is enough to win enough baseball games to get to the World Series. And I think that's a great thing.
So I think there is definitely some discourse going on about, is this a good thing? Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is.
If you want to go back to the old days where the regular season mattered more, that's fine. I'm willing to hear out fewer games in the regular season. Like, that's a conversation I would have, like moving it to 145 or something.
Interesting. Okay.
That I'm open to because it is a lot of games for this, but I have no problem with the tournament.
Yeah.
We've said this so many times on the show. October's not about the truth. And if you want the truth, pull up the WAR leaderboard.
Pull up the standings.
Pull up the standings.
Like, if that's satisfactory to you, I can't relate.
If that's satisfactory to you and that's how you consume the sport, that's fine, right? Yeah. I get it. Actually, I don't get it. Okay. I actually don't get it because the entertainment and the drama and the tension of it is the reason that we like this shit. And it's the reason, at the end of the day, it's like entertainment, right?
Yeah.
And yes, 84 wins is not a lot. No. The gap in regular season wins between the Diamondbacks and the Phillies is the same between the Diamondbacks and the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah.
Okay? Which is remarkable. But it makes what Arizona did this month all the more impressive. It does not make it a fluke. It does not make it a flash in the pan. And I think it deserves respect because they went in and they beat those teams.
Yes.
Okay?
They earned it. That's the thing. And we were kind of talking during Game 7, like, is this more disappointing for Philly as it is impressive for Arizona? And I land on more impressive for Arizona. For all those things we talked about, the missed opportunities for the Phillies, although some of their best players going completely cold over those last few games, some of their pitchers just not showing up when they needed them. Like, all that thing happened, but Arizona still had to be on the other side to take advantage. Yep. And for them to do that is so impressive. The Zach Gallen quote, we've been battle-tested. Had our backs against the wall for 3 months. Okay, that we've heard that a million times. That's not the quote I'm excited to share with you. Everyone counted us out, so we were like, who cares? Let's just see what the hell happens. We got into the dance. They bought us a ticket. Let's just fucking dance and see what happens. Exactly. And we knew that coming into this series in particular. I mean, you could have said that against the Dodgers, but it was like the pressure was on Philadelphia. This team was not just hot, but like, as you mentioned, the irrational belief, they had the confidence and they were good. They were good enough to get this far. And so
there was no downside. there was no downside. Mm-hmm. And that a couple other guys said that to me. It was like, yeah, like if we had lost two games to the Brewers, everyone would have been like, oh, that's a nice season from Arizona.
Yeah, exactly. And then too, like I think back to whatever the discourse about it, it's just like the thing I don't understand is what do you want? Like, do you want to see the same teams? Again, do you want to see the Astros and Dodgers back in the World Series? This is the first World Series we've had without the Astros or Dodgers since 2016. Great. Like, the only way we're... I know that people are not as familiar with the players on the Diamondbacks or even the Rangers to some degree, but how do we grow the sport? How do we get more fan bases to be losing their mind about baseball? It's the Diamondbacks to go to the World Series. And, like, to see these Diamondbacks fans who... Like, honestly, most of us have given zero thought to. But to, like, watch these videos of these people, Phoenix going crazy, like, that's cool. That's like, yes, this is a real thing. And so I know it doesn't mean as much as the Phillies and all the hundreds of years of history and what Philadelphia sports, of course. But, hey, they earned it. And so those fans get to enjoy it. And it's not like there are not a lot of people in Texas that care about the Rangers. So while we certainly do not care about TV ratings, I am excited to watch both
that's the
teams
thing.
In the World Series.
I get frustrated with MLB is going to hate this matchup. It's bad for TV. Like, maybe, but why do we care? Yeah. It's the same thing as complaining about owners spending money. Like, oh, they're wasting. It's not your money. It's not your TV ratings. If you're a Fox executive, shouts out to our bosses. If you're a Fox executive, you can be stressed about the TV ratings. That's fine. It should be nobody else's problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's... If you're listening to... Also, maybe I'm preaching to the choir. If you're listening to us do a baseball podcast, you're in.
Yeah.
Let the joy in, baby. Don't get frustrated. It's not worth it.
Totally agree. I think, as you mentioned, like, people listening to this show, I don't think they're going to be surprised where we stand on this, and it's great. I think it's exciting that people are going to get to find out more about the players on both of these teams. And as I tweeted, like, now we get to start to envision the end result of Evan Longoria maybe winning a World Series, right? I know he's been objectively bad, but, like, who cares? The dude's put in his time, and we know he's made a big difference on this Diamondbacks team. Or the Rangers are going to win their first World Series. That is really something to behold. But we're going to save the actual World Series preview for later in the week. For now, we are going to say goodbye to the Phillies, say goodbye to the regular postseason, the regular postseason. Oh, that reminds me. Ron Darling, I was reminded during this month on TV, which you have not been able to experience watching this series, how Ron Darling calls it the post.
I like that.
Every time it makes me laugh, and I'm like, hell yeah, the post.
Fitting.
Trey Turner's hitting 143 in the post.
Very fitting with the NBA coming back.
Yes. So good. So anyway, I love that. But anyway, the World Series approaches. Game one in Arlington at Globe Life is on Friday. We will talk to you at some point before then. Not sure exactly when. But until then, thank you all for listening. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing this podcast. The snakes are alive. The Phillies are not. And we will be back to talk about the World Series very soon.
SiriusXM Podcasts.